Hello, this is Eric Morse Eskenazi. I am the host of the Iraq Dispatches podcast. Thanks for tuning into this latest episode featuring an interview with my guest, Sally Brown, who's a feminist artist, writer, and curator. During this podcast episode for Iraq Dispatches, Sally discusses her very prolific career in the art world, in education, as a performance artist, also in fashion and other avenues of creativity in the art world. I hope you enjoyed this podcast interview. Hello, thanks for listening to the Erratic Dispatches podcast. We'll be back shortly after a brief break. All right, so Sally, so I was reading, looking over your CV. You have a very impressive amount of credits in the art world. I know that you're an artist, writer, curator. You have like a background of fashion design. Do you mind discussing a bit about like how you first became inspired and in getting into art, studying art history, and also fashion?
Yeah, thanks for that question. I've always been interested in the arts and creativity. When I was a kid, I wanted to be an actress and or famous artist or pretty much anything creative, a writer, anything. In high school, I was in art history and I got assigned to write an essay about Marcel Duchamp's New Descending the Staircase. And he's a Dada artist. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he made this kind of abstract nude walking down the staircase. And it just totally inspired me learning about Dada. And so from there on, I was pretty interested in the arts. And I also loved sewing and I loved expressing myself through fashion, going to thrift shops and buying, you know, old kind of kitschy, fun clothes, which I still do. So I was able to take fashion design in high school and I loved it for a time. And then when I went to undergrad and majored in fashion, I realized that I did not love sewing and the fashion merchandising part. I just fell in love with drawing. Like I just loved pencil, charcoal, anything, the most simple thing to paper and the figure. And so that's when I kind of really fell in love with the simplicity of, you know, basic art. And from there, I just kept making art. And that was whatever, 20 years ago when I started making art besides, you know, kid artwork and stuff.
And do you mind talking about like when you were studying art history, were you like studying any particular periods in the art world, like any particular centuries or movements of the art world?
Well, when I was an undergrad, I was a studio art drawing major and my minors were English and art history. And when you had minors, you didn't really have to focus too much, but I really loved abstract expressionist. Jim Dine is a favorite, Honoré Matisse. I didn't really know that much about women artists. We didn't really learn that much about them, to be honest, in like art history basic classes. And so that was that. But when I started making art in my 20s and early 30s, I became a mom, I kind of was kind of looking out more for more women artists and mother artists. And I realized I didn't really know that much about them. And so I started doing a blog, interviewing women artists. And I had a column in the local newspaper reviewing arts. And I really focused on women's perspective and artistry. And I did some self-research and I just really got inspired to go back and get my graduate degree in art history, and I focused on feminist art and curating of women artists and how their displays impact viewer perception. And so I would say my specialization is feminist artists and women artists. My favorite is like 1970s feminist artists and conceptual artists with a strong intent around the body. So a lot like my work, very heavily inspired by the feminist artists before and around me.
And when you're studying like different feminist artists or women artists, were you like studying like different mediums like photography, film, like performance art, all that different avenues of that?
Definitely. Like a lot of them, most of them explore with different media, like Carolee Schneeman. She does mixed media. She does performance work. She does photography. Judy Chicago is a favorite, obviously installation work. She does glass work, painting, drawing, quilt fabric work. I love Micheline Thomas. She's a contemporary artist. She does a lot of different mixed media collage work, also dealing with art history. So a lot of these feminist artists like me are really interested in art history and the impact of academia and institutionalization of art. And so they do a lot of work dealing with art history and feminist art around them as well. So it's this cool, like, sort of tradition to challenge art history. Yeah.
And then I do see here that you, I guess you did a thesis about revealing Judy Chicago's The Dinner Party analysis of the curatorial context. Like, have you been to the Brooklyn Museum here in the city? Because I know they have that exhibit there.
Oh yeah, definitely. So when I was in grad school, I was trying to explore what I wanted to do for my thesis. And I think my first idea is that I was going to do like a survey of different feminist exhibits and how they were curated and how, you know, the positioning, the context, the didactics, everything impacted viewer perception. Just a general survey of maybe 10 or 12 exhibitions that I visited throughout the country during that time, which was 2016. And I was going to New York City anyway to visit some exhibits. And I think at the College Art Association conference at the time was there. And one of my advisors said, well, you should go to the Brooklyn Museum and see Judy Chicago's The Dinner Party. And I was like, oh, everybody knows about Judy Chicago's The Dinner Party. I didn't want to do something that was so already well discussed and well researched and well documented, even though outside of feminist art history, most people don't know what it is. And, you know, and there still can be more talked about. At the time, I felt like it would had been done enough. But I went to see it, and when I saw it, I just couldn't believe how much more to it there was than just the table, not just the table. The table is beautiful. A triangular table with 48 place settings dedicated to women in Western art history, and each place setting has a ceramic bowl styled to the woman in history, like her profession or her interests, her passion, what she did to make a difference for women. And then it also has a fabric runner, and these were all designed by her and created by 400 volunteers, highly researched, highly detailed, multi-dimensional work of art that also included art historical context. So not only were you seeing the artwork, but you got to see about all of these women she featured on the table and their historical context, which was new. Like, this was new history that she was bringing to attention. And when I saw it in 2016, I think it was new to me. So some of this information still hasn't made it into history books. So I was very just astounded by how much more it was than just the table. And when I did further research, I found that when she originally debuted it, 1979 through 1985, she had even more curatorial context to it, which greatly impacts viewer perception. And so my thesis was about the difference in how institutionalization affects how artwork is displayed, and then how it affects viewer perception of the work and the intent and the content. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I've seen that exhibit multiple times. It's always pretty overwhelming when I go into that room. You know, it takes up this huge, the scope of it. It's really amazing. And you're like this tour going around all the whole area and just checking out. And they have like a legend maybe of like the names and the kind of give you the context of the, you know, the diagram of like what it symbolizes and the different artists or cultural figures that she's referencing in the work.
Exactly. And that has actually since been taken down, unfortunately, but you can still get it online.
Yeah, on Wikipedia, I think they have like all the information there about about the artwork.
Yeah.
And so like, I guess you're originally from Nebraska?
Yeah, mostly. I moved around a lot. I was born in Oregon, so I have a West Coast in me, but I mostly grew up in Omaha, Nebraska in the Midwest. Yeah, I moved out to Morgantown, West Virginia 7 or 8 years ago now. So, yeah, small towns, sort of.
And like where you're based at, is there like any like art scene there or thriving art scene?
I'm about an hour from Pittsburgh, and I love Pittsburgh. There's so many museums and different pockets of galleries. I show a lot there. In Morgantown, West Virginia, we have WVU, which is West Virginia University, which is where I have my day job curating for the university. And we have the Art Museum of West Virginia University, which is nice for what it is. It's a small university art museum. And then we have a contemporary gallery on campus. And maybe two, you know, locally owned coffee shop type places. So it's a very, very small community. That said, I have had some great opportunities. I have some of my body prints as public art downtown, and I've been able to do some shows down here, but mostly I show my work elsewhere. Yeah.
And have you, like, I know I was checking out the different work on your website. Have you ever gotten involved like in video art?
I have, actually. I am not technologically inclined, but I have partnered with someone who was. I made this film called Mother Artist Model, and I've also been an art model for photographers and painters and drawers and classes and things like that. So that's one of the aspects of my sort of artistic and general identity. So I made this video with another art model and then another artist and then myself, and we were all mothers. And so it was a performance work where I was doing body prints, the artist was drawing the model, and it was the audio was us having different thoughts about being a mother. And so I did that. And then I always keep documentation of my body prints with video. I haven't done anything with them yet, but they're there, maybe for the future, who knows. So I wish I was more technologically inclined, but I just haven't gotten there yet.
And do you mind talking a little about, I'm sorry, my French isn't that good. I think La Femme Follies.
Yeah, La Femme Folle.
Mm-hmm. Like you have, like, I guess you've done several series or curated like several volumes. Do you mind talking a little bit about that and how that came together and collaborating with other artists?
Yeah, so I mentioned before so when I graduated from undergrad, as I said, I was a drawing major, I decided that there was enough artists making work and my perspective didn't matter. So I stopped making art. I donated all my supplies and I went and I did, like, you know, gallery fundraising and exhibits and events for different organizations. And I had an art column and stuff like that. But once I had my kids, I really felt this yearning to get back into the arts again. But I kind of needed like a reason or encouragement or some sort of impetus. So that was another reason for creating La Femme Folle, which was a blog where I interviewed women and mother artists about their career. And it spanned 10 years, 2011 to 2021. And I interviewed over 1,000 women and all from, you know, beginning artists to like Leslie Dill, who's a very accomplished museum level artist, and Susan B. Every year, well, I think I did seven different art and poetry books under La Femme Folle were published. So they would be kind of like an annual with different art and writing from the artists that I featured. And it really helped me, like, to see all these women making this creative work and confidently, and you know, their experiences and their times, to be able to be confident with my own work and providing me with that, you know, foundational confidence in my own work. So it's kind of throughout my work is like documenting and paying honor to other women artists for doing what they are. And then it also inspires my own work. So I retired La Femme Folle last year after 10 years. And I actually just started another blog doing art criticism because I missed that so much. But that doesn't have, I don't have an interviewing plan, but I might not, but my plan is for my blog to review exhibits that I visit this summer as I travel throughout the summer. So just kind of fun little creative outlet for me.
That's great. And then like the beginning of the pandemic, were you ever doing any kind of conferences or presentations online?
Yeah, I did. I participated in the College Art Association. Yeah, during the pandemic, that was online. I did a presentation on body positive artists on Instagram. That was really fun. There's so many great emerging and established feminist artists on Instagram making body positive work. It's really a good, strong aspect of social media. So I presented about that during the pandemic. And I also, I started a series in my day job, West Virginia University, of virtual programs around art during pandemics. And so I did a couple presentations around that and other kind of virtual programs with artists for my day job. So yeah, my day job curating right before the pandemic was mostly in person and working with artists and putting up displays. So when the pandemic happened, all the, you know, people in these positions where most of their work was done in person had to kind of change and redefine what that meant. So I started doing a lot of different virtual programs and virtual exhibits. Yeah. And now it's kind of more hybrid. I do both, which I think is probably true for a lot of people.
And do you ever like collaborate with like other media artists, like maybe like doing like apps, you know, where people can check out different artworks using like their phone or tablet?
Gosh, I wish. Do you have anybody I can get with like and create something like that? That is a dream, to be able to have sort of like an online feminist gallery where I can sell contemporary feminist work in an easy way. That would be like my dream job. I just don't have the technological capability right now.
And do you mind talking a little bit about your curatorial work? Like, do you curate like artists like in the area, or do you kind of reach out to like people throughout the nation or international artists?
Yeah, both. I mean, I curate at WVU. That's my day job. And that is more of a like academic, you know, most of my exhibitions are socially justice themed, but mostly scholarly topics with both educational content and artwork and poetry. And it's mostly regionally focused around Appalachia. And I love that. And it is really fun. But then independently, my focus is feminist art. And I just co-curated an exhibition called Feminist Connect. It was at Charles Lubbock's gallery in Charles Adams Studio Project in Lubbock, Texas, with Leslie Sotomayor. And we did a call for work a couple years ago of artwork inspired by a feminist artist of your past or around you. So again, theme to my work. And we did the call internationally. We got submissions from the UK and Australia, over 200 submissions. And we selected maybe, I think, 40 artists. And we created an online exhibition first that is still available, La Femme Full, feministconnect.com, I think. And it has collage work, it has video work, painting, drawing, all of these artists from around, I think they're all from the US, making this work in tribute to feminist artists before and around them. And then from that, we made this smaller abbreviated gallery exhibition with 14 artists that was in Lubbock, Texas in March, for Women's History Month. So that was really fun. And then I have an exhibition coming up in August in Omaha. I'm going home. And I have around 30 artists making art around the body. So I made it really broad. It's called Bodies, Art by Sally Brown and Friends. It'll be at Pet Shop Gallery. And the body is like feminism, one of my favorite topics in art to explore. So I'm really excited about that as well. And so, yeah, I do a combination. That'll be mostly Omaha area artists. I do a combination of, you know, big exhibitions from people across the nation to like smaller, more locally sourced exhibits.
And are you like working on any projects right now where you're collaborating with other artists, you know, dealing with like what's going on with, you know, like with the conservatives in this country to try to have like, you know, what's going on with abortion? Like, are you doing anything like that?
I mean, my work kind of like naturally blends itself. That's something that's kind of like always present in my mind is having women having control over their own bodies. So it's not something that I'm like necessarily specifically, I mean, I'm definitely doing things in my personal life to support our choice, our bodily choice, but it's not something that it's not a topic that I directly impose upon in my art outright or my curating outright, even though it is an underlying sort of thought, intent. Just having control over our own bodies is kind of like foundational to like everything that I create and think of and do.
And in regards to your own like drawings or paintings, like do you mind talking a little about like the type of like is there a type of paints that you like using over others? What type of materials do you like using? You prefer using?
I am a really, I don't want to say basic, but I'm a very like foundational artist. I love charcoal. I love pencil. Mm-hmm. I love watercolor. I love acrylics on canvas. I'm just looking around at my art. I love acrylics. Acrylic is really safe for, you know, skin. So I'm doing body printing. I want it to be safe. And it's also pretty cost efficient. And so I use a lot of acrylics. It dries fast. And so those are my favorites, I think. I mean, like I said, really traditional, simple, raw. That's a lot of what my work has to do with, is just like the base of art.
And with your own writing, like, have you like ever put together like independent like publications, or do you usually just kind of like freelance?
Well, I used to have a column in Omaha in the newspaper. It was called The Reader. And so I had a regular gig. I had a little art gossip column I did weekly. It was so fun. And I also did regular reviews for a couple years there. So that was a regular like publication gig. But otherwise, it's sometimes I'll get asked to write an article about Judy Chicago, or write a book review. Somebody, some publication or author will ask me to write a book review. But mostly it's pretty random, my freelance writing and publications where I'll get them published. But I did illustrate two books. One is called Intimates and Fools. And that was a book of one long poem about the bra and the body. And I did body prints and drawings. And I won an illustrator award for that book, published in 2017, I think, with poetry by Laura Madeline Wiseman. And then we did another collaborative book called Leaves of Absence, around the body and nature and trees. And I also won an award for that. So that was body printing and illustration around a series of poems around nature and the body. So I love doing collaborative stuff like that. I just haven't for a while. But so those were published. The first was under La Femme Fold Books, my publication. And then the next was Red Dashboard Books. They're both available on Amazon.
Okay, great. And have you done like much teaching or instruction work with like both undergrad and graduate students?
Yeah, so I did. I have two master's degrees. One is in nonprofit administration. So I've done some like grant writing and art mm-hmm. administration teaching. And then I've done some multidisciplinary teaching, kind of more open-ended thinking kind of classes to get students thinking creatively about their career and who they are and who they want to be. So I haven't necessarily taught linear, mm-hmm. Art historical classes. When I was a grad student, I was a teaching assistant, but I mostly dealt one-on-one with students, tutoring and grading papers and things like that, which is more of my strengths, I think.
And what do you find the biggest joys and challenges of being an artist?
The challenges are the business side of it. Like, it's exhausting. Just before I got on with you, I was reading a list of art opportunities and where I could submit for residencies and exhibitions and publications. And it's just a lot of work to document your work and then submit it out there, especially when you already have a full-time job and kids and everything like that, and worry about sales. Well, I don't really worry too much about it, but it would, you know, it is always nice because I am so prolific. I make so much work that I am happy when somebody likes it enough to buy it. The joys are just making it, just the line, the paper, just that moment where I get to have silence and, you know, draw some lines on a page, even if it's just a few minutes a day. Or when I think of like a new series idea, or when I see like a feminist work that's so inspiring that I want to make a tribute drawing to it. Or body printing is so fun. It's just relaxing, like like working out. It's very inspiring just listening to music and creating the work and just having the privilege to be able to make the work. I mean, I do recognize that. I do have the time and space to make this kind of crazy and silly, expressive, conceptually driven work. So, yeah.
And like right now, I know you're very prolific with your work. So right now, are you just kind of like working like randomly on like how many different like paintings or drawing series are you currently working on?
It's constant. I always whips, works in progress. I have a huge pile on my desk right now of like body prints that I'm maybe going to write text onto or body print again or paint more onto. I have several feminist tribute drawings going. I have a new series of breast prints that I'm kind of exploring drawing food with, so food and art. And I have a series of self-portraits that I'm doing around our control over our bodies for the bodies exhibit. And so I always have tons of stuff going on. I love starting new work.
Are you working on any upcoming like books or catalogs?
No, I'd love to. Actually, I just saw a submission for a publication that's looking for artists who would collaborate with writers. So I would love to meet another like-minded sort of feminist writer who'd be interested in a collaborative project. It's a lot of communication. It's a lot of work and back and forth. So it's not just something, you know, easy to pick up and commit to, but it's a really fun process to be able to collaborate with an artist. That's my cat. With a poet. Yeah.
And like, have you been involved with like different think tanks, you know, with other artists, just like sharing ideas?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of different, you know, social media groups sharing our work and different ideas and getting feedback. There's a lot of really awesome like feminist artists who I've met through social media who've been super cool about like providing feedback and just meeting people through that and just chatting with them about our work. And I like to hold little salons with feminist artists, so I'm gonna hold my first virtual one here next month with just a few artists just to share about our work and where we're at and get feedback and just get inspired and just be able to have a intimate like conversation about what we're each doing and in a safe space. So it's not like we're, you know, posting on social media necessarily, but we're having this safe little conversation with four or five artists. And yeah, it's really fun, kind of informal little opportunity that I like to do every couple of months.
And have there been any like feminist art collectives or emerging artists that you've been really blown away by with their work or what they're doing?
Yeah, like so many. It's like even hard to say. Like if I go to my Amy Chaplin, she's a drawer, painter, and she does a series of portraits of feminist artists of the past and present. And it's really, really cool. She'll do like a lot of research on the artists and their personality and their history. And she'll create these portraits about them. And then I'm trying to remember the name of this other artist we had in Feminist Connect, whose work that she makes NFTs, and I've just been blown away by her.
NFTs?
Yeah, she makes NFTs, and let me see if I can find. She was also in Feminist Connect in Lawrence de Valmy. So her works, she does a variety of these works, and some of them that you can see. So she recreates paintings by famous artists, Grace Hartigan, Lee Krasner, Andy Warhol. And she pretends she poses as them on Instagram, and she makes a post as them on Instagram with the painting and with like a little quote, like what they would say. And then sometimes she'll even have like comments from other famous artists after them. So that's the painting. And she even has like a little profile picture, and it's really cool. She has also done NFT like videos in a similar style. So her name is Lawrence Devalmi, and I'm really excited about her work and career to come. And I'm trying to think of a feminist artist who does work around the body. I mean, I already mentioned Micheline Thomas, who's a big favorite, doing work around specifically the Black female body and exploring beauty and beauty standards and womanhood and art history and our place as women within that.
And what about, like, were you ever inspired by any like feminist like rock bands or, you know, groups that came out of the, like, the punk scene, the post-punk scene?
Elle King is not that, but she is like my current favorite, and she's definitely got punk vibes. So that would definitely be, I mean, I love Heart. I love, you know, that's 80s. But Elle King is like my poster girl for like contemporary feminist artistry. She just has so much confidence. She's just so unabashed in everything that she like sings about and expresses about being a woman in contemporary society. And she just doesn't care. It's awesome. And it's so inspiring.
And what about performance artists? So like, when you're going to university, like, were there any performance artists that you're really like inspired by, blown away by, or you like, you know, you're studied?
I mean, Carolee Schneeman, of course, the Interior Scroll. And then she also did, which was the Interior Scroll, was she was naked, and she pulled out a scroll from her vagina, which had a review from a critic on it, and it's one of her most acclaimed piece. But she also did a series when she was 40, which I'm 41, so I'm like, cool. She went to an art museum and took her clothes off and did a series of self-portraits in the museum, nude, and it's just amazing, and that's like my favorite thing. And then Marina Abramović is present, of course. She also did a lot of performance works with her ex-husband that had to do a lot to do with gender and power that are really inspiring. And she's, you know, still creating work, and she has like her own museum now and everything. And so it's really inspiring to see an artist, you know, like her become successful. When you're conceptual like that, I feel like it's harder to get success. And so I just find her work like really, really inspiring. Yeah.
Did you ever see like Karen Finley do her performance live?
You know what? I have one of her books, and no, I've never seen it. I actually asked her if I could perform one of her works, and she said no. But no, why? Have you seen her?
Yeah, a long time ago when I was at university back in the 90s. Yeah. Oh, cool. She was really amazing. Like, just, yeah, she's like really intense. You know, seeing her perform, you know, live, because she'd do like reverse striptease. She'd be nude, and then she would eventually just put on pieces of clothing, you know, as she goes along with the performance. So that was pretty amazing to see her.
That reminds me of Yoko Ono's cut piece, which is also one of my favorites, when she sat there and had the audience cut her clothes off. It's like, so groundbreaking, so cool.
Yeah. And like, are you inspired by like any like, you know, radical artists, like, you know, the ones that would get arrested for doing different things?
Chris Burden.
Oh, Chris Burden, or like with like the Russian band Pussy Riot, they got arrested a lot.
I mean, for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's super rad, and they're like totally out there doing this work, and yeah, like you said, like being arrested and just keep on going, like that's amazing. I mean, Gorilla Girls haven't been arrested, but they're amazing and super inspiring. Gosh, what a dream would that be to be part of the Gorilla Girls? That would be amazing. I mean, Judy Chicago, the dinner party was discussed on the House floor for being vulgar and pornographic and it's abstracted work. And you know, you look at it now and it's just these beautiful abstracted ceramic works. And then Robert Mapplethorpe's discussed. And there's a show actually in Minneapolis as well, where, because Winnie the Pooh, did you hear that Winnie the Pooh is now free copyright? So anybody can create with the image of Winnie the Pooh now. And so this guy kind of created this painting with Winnie the Pooh. I think it was about violence and killing Piglet, and people kind of freaked out and wanted it. The police called and wanted it taken down. It's just like, if you read the context, it's really about, you know, race and violence, and you can't just see a work and, you know, you can judge it, but like you read more into it and you get more of a context, the intent and the meaning. So the museum stood their ground and said, no, we're keeping this up. So that kind of stuff really interests me, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
What about like graphic novels? Have you been interested in maybe doing some stuff with graphic novels, like a feminist graphic novel?
I would love to do that. Like, I've done work with poetry, and I love, I have like a graphic novel, like a feminist art history graphic novel. And then there's some like comedic feminist graphic novelists that I've done tribute work for, and I can't remember their names, but I would absolutely love to do that. I think it would be a matter of finding a writer who would be interested. And here, I'm a writer, but like, I don't write creatively necessarily, but maybe I should try. But I would love to do that. I really like the collaborative process of working with a writer and getting ideas kind of back and forth together. So yeah, I would love to do that.
That'd be great.
Hello, thanks for listening to the Erratic Dispatches podcast. We'll be back shortly after a brief break.
What about like feminist filmmakers? Like, have you seen any films by the Belgian filmmaker Chantal Akerman?
No, tell me. Well, maybe, but probably not. Tell me about it.
So she made a very famous film that came out in the 70s. I'll pull up the title for you right now, because I know like the Criterion Collection, or if you have like the Criterion Collection streaming channel, like a lot of her films are on there. And there's like a film that she did in the early 70s. I do apologize, because I know I did take 1 year of French, but I'm just not that fluent in it. So her most famous film is called Jeannie Dielman, 23. What I'll do after our podcast is I'll send you a link for it. But it's like a film about like a woman who's just like doing like, I mean, it's like, this is a long movie. It's like it's over 3 hours long. So it's like, you're seeing a woman just do like basic mundane things like cleaning, just shots of just no dialogue, just her doing this mundane things around the house. And then like, but what she does is she also supplements herself or income as a prostitute. So like at the end of the movie, you see her, one of her clients, and then she ends up just like killing, like stabbing her client to death. And it's like definitely one of the key like feminist films of the 70s.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I mean, she made a lot of movies. She was like a very prolific a filmmaker. And then there was like another film that I saw a couple of years ago. It's called Born in Flames. You ever heard about that movie? Lizzie Borden. It's like early 80s kind of like post-punk movie about a group of like feminist artists, and they're sort of like almost plotting to do like almost like a I'm not saying like they're a terrorist group, but they're like real radical.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So yeah, I was wondering if maybe you've seen those films or before.
Like Martha Rosler did some work like in the kitchen, domestic films.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an artist who did sex from the female point of view in the 1970s. And I'm trying to remember her name. That one.
Maybe it was like, did you hear of a band from they were like industrial band from England. They were called Throbbing Gristle. There was like a member of the band, and she was a feminist artist. And like she, on the side, she would do porn. Like she would do it to be very kind of provocative in a way, but while also being a member of a band.
Oh, cool.
And then the band, The Slits, you ever heard of the band, The Slits? They're all female band from England. Uh-huh. Yeah. So yeah, and then like here in New York, we have like a bookstore like I used to go by a lot called Loose Stockings, and they would have like a lot of different events. They would have like a lot of zines from like local artists and all that. Like, is there any like bookstores like, you know, like near the university that you work at that are like that?
Gosh, I wish. No.
Yeah.
No, we have Barnes and Nobles, but no.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish. That would be amazing.
Yeah. And do you mind talking a little bit about like, I know you, I think you wrote some research or you did some work about like Cindy Sherman.
I think I reviewed one of her show. Yeah. Like a solo show that she had.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love her work, her transformation of herself into so many different identities.
Yeah.
She still does it today. It's really inspiring, you know, like self-portraiture and from, you know, movie figures to, you know, people on the street and exploring beauty and identity and domesticity and sexuality. And it's absolutely super inspiring. I love her work, for sure.
And with your experience with younger artists, like, do you find that a lot of them are like, I mean, like this, like all the messed up things that are going on in this country, you think a lot of them are like really inspired to just do really, you know, provocative work, you know, to fight against like what's going on?
I think so.
And the oppression and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think that like conceptual work and challenging traditional modes of art and thinking about society and social justice is really, really picking up now and today and is more like acceptable and encouraged in art school. And it's just more exciting to walk into, you know, gallery and space and see something that really has content beyond aesthetics. I think that's, it's definitely encouraged and it's seen. I mean, that's the stuff that I'm interested in. So perhaps I'm just seeing it because I want to see it, but I definitely think that it is.
And I was like, I watched like an interview with you, like it was on YouTube, you're being interviewed and you're talking about like, and I'm aware of this, of like how horrible it is, how like there's been a lot of cutbacks in this country with art programs in the schools. And do you know if there's any like groups or foundations that are kind of fighting against that to try to hopefully that will put more money into funding for art programs for children?
For children? Oh, I mean, I would just go to the National Endowment for the Arts or Americans for the Arts. There's a lot of grant programs that are really good and, you know, well, if you write grants, if you research grants and write grants, there's going to be a lot of programs, foundations, and funds that will definitely support that. But in terms of like schools cutting that, it's just extremely unfortunate because it should be one of the main subjects that students get to learn and express themselves and figure out how to express themselves and how and why that's important in art history and individually. So, yeah.
And then like with your own artwork, like what's like for your long-term plans, what are you hoping to maybe, like as we discussed before, you're hoping maybe to explore other mediums to get your work out there or?
Yeah, definitely.
Or to experiment?
Yeah, I've tried to explore making NFTs actually. Everyone keeps telling me to make NFTs. Uh-huh. It's like, it's a different mindset for me. I have been getting back into doing collage. I used to love doing collage. So I've been doing collage combined with drawing. I always have to have drawing. That's my cat again. And doing some more watercolor work, I think, and getting bigger. I have worked pretty small for a long time. And so having a space to get bigger and be able to make bigger works like I did in school is something that I'd really like to get back into.
Like what's like the biggest, like in regards to the size or the format, like with your drawings or like what's the largest
you've worked with? I've made some body print works on fabric and paper that have been really big that I've been able to, like the work that I have in Lubbock, Texas, I did a body print on lace and that was about 7 feet by like 10 feet. So that's something that I can do, let it dry and then roll up and put away. So that's probably around the biggest that I've made, but most of my drawing and prints are smaller, like 5x5 to like 18x24 or something like that. So I've bought a bunch of different domestic fabrics at the thrift store because I love playing with domesticity and what that means, and having body prints on them. And then I've been exploring with bringing back my fashion into it. So these, you know, doing some stitching and stitching text from various feminist texts and exploring the body on fabric. And so those are all way bigger works. So that allows me to be bigger. But I'd love to do bigger drawings, but bigger drawings require big paper and big canvas that requires bigger space. So that's one of my hopes for upcoming works, is to do bigger drawings.
And do you mind talking a little about like the fashion work? Like what have you designed? Dresses, shirts, like shorts, pants, undergarments?
Well, I do have some of my body prints made into fabric prints. And then I have some like t-shirts. I have some tank tops on Vita.com. So they accepted some of my body prints and made them into some fashion. There's a scarf. So there's that. And then I've also made some actual like body print clothes, like some tank tops with body prints and everything like that. But what I meant by what I was just saying by getting back into fashion is actually the practice of sewing. So less so necessarily the fashion and more so the process of stitching and sewing in like combined with my body print work. So I'm thinking about fabric and I'm thinking about texture and I'm thinking about what these fabrics meant. You know, I got them from thrift stores, so they're, you know, curtains or they're table runners or tablecloths, or I got one that's a quilt. And so what these meant to the houses and people and women who use them, and then thinking about women's roles in that, and body printing and stitching some texts from various feminist art text exploring gender and the body and all of that kind of combined. I love multi-layered content. So, yeah.
And what type of materials, like, do you like with the fashion or the sewing, like what do you
usually work with? I have thread, I have embroidery. I like embroidery because it's thicker, so I don't have to go through the fabric as much. And I love lace just because it has so much like femininity to it. And then I got some like gold like floral curtains, and stitching with embroidery is what I've been doing. I mean, I have a sewing machine and I have thread. It's just that I like the physical action, just like drawing with my hand and stitching with my hand. So it's very, just like my drawing, very basic, raw process of needle to fabric.
Yeah. And like, as your journey as an artist, like, do you mind like discussing like any unusual stories that inspired you on your journey with research, or people you come across?
Yeah, I think so when I got back into art after I had kids, my first exhibition of my body prints, which was my first series outside of drawings of kids and stuff like that, that I did. And it was called Voice. And so I did a series of body prints, and I used interviews from my blog of women artists talking about being a woman artist or a mother artist. And I scripted excerpts from the interviews on my body prints, and I installed them with a clothesline. And there's maybe 12 of them in this exhibition that I co-curated with 10 other women artists doing work around the body and women's experience. And when I went to the launch, the exhibition opening reception, I was so excited. You know, here's, you know, my debut artwork, you know, me, and I had my kids, they were 2 and 4 or something like that. But most people wanted to know what my kids thought about the work, and if they saw me making body prints, and what their friends might think, and what in the future they might think of me doing work around the body. I was just like, hello, me, I'm here. So my next series, that was probably the most impactful one. I'm like, oh, of course I have kids and of course I'm a mother, but like, I'm also me too. But so then I started really thinking about the relationship of mothering and having young kids and making sensual work around the body. And so my next series that I called What Will Her Kids Think dealt with that. And I researched women and mother artists making art. And it turns out that is a very common thing, which is to be expected for art, women artists, mother artists making kind of more provocative work like Sally Mann, Alice Neal, that they get questioned and challenged. And so, yeah, that was probably the most impactful situations that had to do with my work and researching work throughout my career, and it continues.
And then are there any particular like feminists or women artists that you studied about that you feel are very unrepresentative, like most people wouldn't even heard of, and you feel more people should be aware of them and their work?
I mean,
as like trailblazers.
Yeah, I mean, Renee Cox. I mean, it's just hard to say because there's so many. Judy Chicago, Adrian Piper. Adrian Piper is another like performance artist who came out in late 60s, early 70s, who dealt with curating and race. And she continues to make art, and it's some of it's funny and some of it's, you know, really challenging and hard to look at. And all of it is just interesting and amazing and so important. And she continues to make work. And Renee Cox continues to make work about media's representation and about her body. And, you know, she's growing and aging, and she continues to make this unabashed, confident work. So those are probably two that I would say more people should know about and learn about.
And then, like, do any of your inspiration with your own artwork, do they ever come out of like unusual situations, like dreams, or just like you see something and something sparks something for you?
Oh yeah, I think that's like most of the time. Is I'm constantly like reading, going back and rereading like art history books or like my books about feminist artists, and visiting exhibitions, and, you know, seeing art on Instagram, and just trying to look when I review exhibitions, like I'm trying to look and see it in a different way and think about my life and experience in a different way, and like, oh, I could do that. And also when I do my body prints, it's less about specifics, it's more about expression. So when I can sort of see things in a more expressive way instead of what it is in an objective way, if that makes sense, that's really inspiring and moves my work along. And my kids generally, just like everything they do, like from homework to their artwork, to what they say and how they see my work, really impacts what I'm making and what I'm doing. And they'll have ideas. They'll say my work looks like cartoon characters and I didn't even see it. And so, yeah, just sort of everyday life. I just love art in all of its forms. And so it's just always fun to look at and talk about every day.
And like, what kind of like public artwork have you done?
It's really funny. It's so ironic. There's these trash cans downtown, these public trash cans on our main street. And they called for work to be reproduced and made into vinyl on these trash cans. So I have 8 of my body prints on these public trash cans on the main downtown. I love it because they're so abstract. You know, you wouldn't necessarily know what they are. And also the fact that, you know, some people, you know, don't like my art and think that it's trashy. And so now it's on trash cans, and I just love that. And then I got commissioned to create 2 works for the public library here. And they asked me to do something around, you know, books or literature or reading or writing. And so I made these 2 tributes to Helen Sissou. She wrote The Laugh of the Medusa, which is about the importance of women creating works around the body and just expressing themselves. So I wrote the text of The Laugh of the Medusa, and I body printed around and on the text, and those are in the downtown public library here. So it's kind of, I'm really proud of those.
Have you done like any kind of like sculpture work?
I don't think so. Not that I can like think of. I remember taking, you know, ceramics, and I just was not good at it. I really just love 2D work, but not yet, I guess I should say.
Mm-mm. And are your own kids artists as well?
My son loves to draw. He loves like creating characters, like, and like thinking about game. He's a gamer, so like games. He's got all these notebooks with game ideas and drawings. It's so cute. And my daughter is very creative. She plays violin. She's not so much into art as much anymore. I used to drag him always along to museums and to my shows with me, and sometimes they go with me, but not as much. They're teenagers now, so I was the same.
And what would you say if you were approached by like a teenage girl who said like she wants to get into art? Like, what would you, kind of advice would you give to her?
That's funny, because when I was in undergrad, 1999 through 2003. The professors were just so hard on us. Like, they were like, if you don't want to live in a cardboard box, then you can't be an artist, and you can't get married and have kids if you want to be an artist. And so I would say that you have to just keep at it, and you have to think of different ways about what that career looks like. You know, if you want to be a professor, if you know what you want to do, I would so encourage them to just go for it at the beginning. Like, be confident about it and just go for it all the way, because be strong and confident, and we need more women's perspectives out there. We still do, so it's important, and I would definitely encourage them to, unlike the college professors that I had.
And are there like a lot of like foundations like right now for artists to apply for, like getting grant money? Is it like?
Yeah, there's one, the Deming Grant for Women, I applied for earlier. That's in the spring. There's so many like listservs that you can get onto that have like different grants, residencies, and exhibitions. Artwork Archive, you can get on that art list, Art Deadlines list. There's some different like feminist lists that you can get onto, and anybody can feel free and email me and I can hook you up. Cause sometimes you just have to like know people, you know, to get on different listservs and know about, I mean, you know, there's just so many things out there. It's hard to sift through everything. And so yeah, the Barbara Deming Grant, that's what it's called, for women artists. It's a really good one.
Great.
Hello. Thanks for listening to the Erratic Dispatches podcast. We'll be back shortly after a brief break. Thanks again for tuning into this latest episode of the Erratic Dispatches podcast, featuring an interview with my guest, Sally Brown, feminist artist, writer, and curator. For the Anchor FM profile page on this podcast episode, you can check out links to Sally's official website. Also, there are links to purchase books that she's done illustration work for on Amazon, and also links to her various and many social media accounts. Definitely check out her work, and I hope inspires other artists out there. And I'll be back soon with a new episode. Take care. Bye-bye.